This is Laura Deirdre with the Becker's Payer Issues Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Karen Dignani, President and CEO of Emblem Health, a New York City-based nonprofit health insurance company. Karen, it's a pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, I know we'll talk a lot about where things are headed over the next few years and some of the most interesting issues in healthcare today. But before we dive into that discussion, could you tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background?
Sure. I have been at Emblem for just about 5 years now. Prior to that, I spent a significant part of my career in D.C., most recently at AHIP, the Association for the Health Plan Community. Prior to that, I was at the AFL-CIO, and prior to that, I was on Capitol Hill. So I've spent my time largely in Washington working on policy issues and legislative affairs and community and public health involvement.
That's fascinating to hear. What was it like going from the public policy side of things to then becoming part of Emblem Health and really running a health insurance company?
It's a great question. I think that it wouldn't have been a natural progression if it hadn't been for what happened in the Affordable Care legislation and passage and execution. When problems occurred in the execution around the exchanges with respect to the Affordable Care Act, we mobilized the best people in the country from the health plan community to partner with the president's team, with the department's team at HHS to work together very intensively to address the infrastructure, the issues, and many of the issues that health plans themselves address with respect to data interchange, the type of software that's necessary for customer relationships, product issues, et cetera. So having that experience for very intensively for almost a year put me in a position that allowed me to understand some of the challenges in with respect to being on the company side, if you will, rather than the policy side. And indeed, we faced those challenges when I came here. One of the biggest things we had to address was how to deal with very significant number of legacy systems that were old-fashioned, weren't agile, didn't connect, and weren't going to be appropriate for the new reality, whether it be the Affordable Care Act or just the 21st century. So that experience in Washington really prepared me to understand how to assess the challenges with respect to technology and to understand what to prioritize and where to get help, actually.
That's so interesting to hear and great that you had that inspiration and then obviously background to jump into the health insurance side of things. Now, how are you thinking about growth for Emblem Health over the next 12 months or so?
That too is a great question and one that we spend a significant amount of time on our team discussing. When I came here, we had a turnaround to execute and we're just about finished that, I'm proud to say. And that began with really seeking to quickly, and I use that term advisedly, and all of my colleagues in the health arena, whether you're on a hospital side, a health plan side, or physician side, most people understand the challenge of legacy platforms. So that was our first job as we thought about growth. How do we put together our platforms into a 21st century system? And I'm very proud to say, and really it's a credit to our team, that we have completed that job. So we are not only ready to compete, but we have an agility that we never had before because we have the state-of-the-art technology, security, et cetera. As part of that, we also reimagined all of our products. We've engaged in very innovative partnerships We've created a strong infrastructure. We've brought in Salesforce, new portals to interact with members, brokers, providers, and to really focus on telehealth and digital health. We've also expanded our community support. We have a unique network of neighborhood care centers embedded in communities that have some significant challenges with respect to disparities, with respect to health equities. We built a wellness company, where we're offering services to states and employers directly. We have expanded and strengthened our physician group. We also are unique in that we have a physician group as part of our enterprise. It's called Advantage Care Physicians, where we have 40 multi-specialty primary care centers throughout the five borough area. So when we think about growth for us, we think about it in four buckets: the insurance side, the physician group side, the wellness side, and the community side. And I'm really very pleased that what has happened, the tragedy of this pandemic that all of us are still living through, has really allowed our physician group to come into their own. And we have seen the value that they provide to other payers, that they provide to public policy officials, to the market, and to the patients they serve. We stayed open throughout COVID, and we're there to partner with the state, with the city, to both do testing early on and then, of course, to deliver vaccines in very innovative ways. And we're located in some of the most challenging communities with respect to people who are underserved and people who face significant amount of health inequities. So when you ask me about growth, we think about all of those different factors together.
Got it. That's really interesting. And especially as you mentioned, unique that you've got the physician group and the clinics that you have access to. I'm wondering, when you look at growth on those sides of things, how are you planning on, you know, what does that look like? Is it adding physicians and clinics, or is it more along the lines of bringing in additional patients and members to the existing infrastructure? What does that look like?
Oh, it's a great, that's an important question. We, over the last year, we have added three centers. We have added a center, for those who know the New York community, in Bethpage on Long Island. We have just 2-3 weeks ago opened a new center in Jackson Heights in Queens, and we have added to our Flushing Center a state-of-the-art GI suite with other specialty services. So we're continuing to expand our footprint, expand our patient base, and allergies, and expand what we're doing in partnering with community groups.
Fantastic. Well, that's really great to hear and exciting on your end. Now, what do you see as being the three most interesting issues that you're following in healthcare right now?
I think that one would have to step back and say, the future of digital empowerment. And that's a very large topic with a lot of different facets. And what it means to me is, how can we help patients? Well, how can we meet them where they are when they want to be met in whatever venue or through whatever means they want to be met? So what does that mean? How do we really expand the use of synchronous and asynchronous text? How do we expand the use of telehealth? How do we get information, pushing information to patients that they need to know, particularly now when the FDA and CDC are giving all of us advice that there should be a third shot for those of us who have taken the RNA vaccines, either Pfizer or Moderna, a second shot for people who have taken J&J. That's an important opportunity to push messages out to individuals through, again, digital mechanisms. Care management, how do you use digital capacity to help keep people well, to provide continuity of care, et cetera. So I think of digital empowerment really from the perspective of empowerment, not just another feature of what we have to offer. And I think that's one of the most compelling issues. Two others that come to mind for me are very concerning, frankly. This pandemic has shined a lot light on the underinvestment that we have made as a country in public health, and you see it everywhere. And there is, you know, people tend to have a 50,000 foot discussion about that, but we need to really see policies and steps forward to address these issues, not just today and forget about it tomorrow, but how do we build this enduring public health capacity? So when whatever is going to happen in the future, and things happen, of course, in healthcare, how are we going to better prepare ourselves as a country? I think this is as important. I see it as part of infrastructure. I see it as part of national readiness. And I think it's a significant issue that all of us have a stake in. And I don't think as a country, we're anywhere near actually understanding what's necessary and how to achieve what's necessary. So I think all of us in the healthcare stakeholder community have a dog in this fight and have a responsibility to participate in the dialogue. The third issue in terms of important issues that's also on my level or area of concern list is the cost of care. We need to have a sustainable system, a sustainable system, whether we're talking Medicare, whether we're talking Medicaid, whether we're talking the Affordable Care Act, whether we're talking employer health care or individual purchase. We have to have sustainability, and that starts with affordability. No one would say our system is affordable today. And there needs to be confronting this question. My cost containment is someone else's revenue reduction. I understand that. So we have to find a place where those dialogues can be held. And again, from a stakeholder perspective, we can think about the solutions to these challenges. But when you look at the cost of care and how it increases compared to GDP or what individuals take home in their salaries every year, there is a disconnect there that has existed for a very long time, but now more and more people are A, aware of the cost side, aware that if we don't solve the cost side, we won't be able to fulfill the promises that have been made on the access side.
That's so interesting to think about in terms of that balance on how much money is in healthcare right now and where it's going and the implications of rolling that back and having less money within the healthcare system. Obviously, like you said, cost containment is important in wanting to make sure that patients have access to the care they need. But at the same time, you know, knowing where the costs can come out of the system without having too much disruption to that care, it seems like just a really complex problem.
Yes, it is, which is why we haven't attacked it as a country. But
absolutely.
We managed to attack the access side. Now we need to attack the cost side. And maybe attack is the right word. I don't know.
Definitely. Do you see that being something that can be attacked on the policy side, or will that be more of on individual companies and healthcare providers to try to figure out on a global level, but individually figure out what works right for them?
It is one of the most important pressing policy issues. But without a doubt, people run to their respective corners when the issue of cost is put on the table because of the issue of potential revenue reduction and how do individual stakeholders address that. But we that shouldn't hold us back as a country as we think about the promises we've made with respect to access, the importance of coverage, the need for the country to make sure that people can go to the doctor, get their preventive care, get catastrophic care if they need it. For all of those promises to be fulfilled, we need to really begin to muster up the courage to have the cost discussion.
Absolutely. That's a really great point, Karen. Now, before we wrap up our conversation, I have one more question for you. What are you most excited about today and what makes you nervous?
I'm most excited that we have modernized a nine-decade-old health plan. And we've turned the boat and we're ready to go. And I'm very excited about that. It's a credit to our terrific and very innovative team that has worked very hard to maintain this important not-for-profit plan in a market that's ever-changing with modernized tools, technology, and products. That is quite an accomplishment, and I owe that to our team. Second, what I'm concerned about is something we've talked earlier about, which is public health and what we've seen during this pandemic has only amplified those concerns, and health equity. I think that it's important for policymakers to really begin to get their heads around not just giving voice to the problem of health equity, but how do we address it? And I've had an advantage of looking at this not only through our health plan side, but through our physician group, which is embedded in many of the underserved areas around our tri-state area, but also our neighborhood care centers that serves anyone from the community that walks in and needs help. We deal with social determinants of care. We deal with a range of issues that affect healthcare, and we deal with helping individuals be well, deal with stress, deal with the problems and challenges of everyday living. So I've really appreciated the perspective of our teams that are doing those respective works at jobs, et cetera. And it's really educated me about the depth of these problems, the challenges we face as a country, and how all of us have a stake in participating in the resolution of them.
Got it. That's fantastic to hear. And I know, as you mentioned, Emblem Health has been really successful in being able to address some of the public health issues. I was wondering, could you give me an example of one of your most successful initiatives that has really made a difference for the communities that you serve?
Yes. One of the things would be in behavioral health. We're doing it again through our neighborhood care centers. We had a network of programs that we would offer for the community, and they were very well attended and very highly rated. With COVID, at least in the early days for our neighborhood care centers, we went virtual, and we realized that our members were still calling, asking for these programs, asking for help. And so we customized a number of programs for around behavioral care. And we worked with our chief of psychiatry in our Advantage Care physician practice to help design meditation programs, to help design a range of things that families need and supports that families need just to keep themselves healthy, to spotlight problems and challenges, and just to help them have a little bit of a helping hand, if you will, dealing with the issues of the day. So that's one example of the types of things we're doing, both on the community side as well as on our physician group side. Another example is on our insurance side. During COVID, we ran what we call the Peace of Mind Initiative. We mobilized people across our health plan, care managers, nurses, physicians, administrators, customer service agents, to really reach out to people we knew were at the highest risk. And so frequently we heard, Laura, that people said, this is the first call I've received in a month. I haven't gone out. I haven't spoken to anyone. Now, we are domiciled in one of the largest cities in the world. And to think about the impact on an individual in terms of the potential for social isolation in such a large city, we found that that was huge. So that then informed our programming for neighborhood care, the types of outreach we did through our physician group, the types of outreach we did through care management, et cetera.
Well, Karen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today. This has been a really fascinating discussion, and I look forward to connecting with you again soon.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity, and ditto.